Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. This is Amanda just doing the quick intro for the episode. This is a two-parter. So if you haven't listened to the first part of our episode, go back to yesterday and listen to that. Today, we're going to kind of really talk about how we can find balance, how we, you know, Sam and I explore how do we protect children but prepare them for life's challenges. Where yesterday we talked about intensive parenting, how impossible the standards are, what it is like to be under constant judgment. Today, we kind of explore how we can foster resilience, especially in a society that offers, let's face it, very little support. So, like I said in the first episode, this is a very nuanced conversation. It's layered. You may not agree with everything we say. Full disclosure, Sam's not a parent and my daughter's only two. So we have a lot to learn about this. We know this is a very nuanced conversation. Parenting brings up a lot because parents are not supported, especially women are not supported in this country. And we don't claim to have all the answers. We are figuring this out along with you. I think the world is changing quickly. Technology, AI, social media, there's so much going on. So Sam and I just wanted to explore what some of our ideas are of what can we do? What are our thoughts? As a parent, I'm thinking about, you know, what I can do to try to create resilience and some independence in my daughter while also, you know, being real about some of the things that are happening in our current society. So we're going to get into it. And as always, if you love the show, one thing you can do to help us so much since we don't have sponsors yet is rate, review, share, subscribe. Share this with one person in your life who you think it might be helpful for. We appreciate you so much. We're going to get into the episode.
Part of the problem is like everybody's so freaking afraid of like making a mistake when you will inherently make a mistake. Like you will inherently get things wrong. And obviously like there's a spectrum of things to not get wrong. Like, of course, there are things that we don't want to do, right? But I also think that list is like fairly small.
It is, but it's scary when a doctor could like report or like when someone could report you to the police for doing something that works for your life.
But like I guess also like I do want to challenge a little bit. Like there's a possibility that because you and your husband are each taking shifts and the baby is sleeping in a crib, the police would be called on you.
Not actually. But what I'm saying is that if you just tell some, if you tell a pediatrician I'm not sleeping with my child in my room, I'm going against pediatrician's guidelines. I don't actually think the police would be called on me. But like you are going against what the AAPA recommends. You are – like they say, you're putting your child more at risk to die.
If you leave them in like their nursery alone.
If you don't sleep with them. Yes. Because – which doesn't actually logically make sense if you like back up from it. But when your pediatrician is telling you this – when you're – I mean you're – like SIDS is a real thing. Things have gotten way better with it. And again, I think that's part of why we're like a product almost of kids rarely die. So – when something happens,
it's so huge.
Parents are the ones that are also blamed, which, you know, makes sense. But like, I have good friends of ours, their baby died of SIDS when he was like, I mean, he wasn't even SIDS technically, but, and nothing happened. They did nothing wrong. But those stories sort of stick with you as a parent and just are a lot more salient when you already are more anxiously prone after you become a parent. And I think that's where I think some parents maybe are never fully able to get out of that. Like you are trained so much when you are pregnant, from the moment you're pregnant, of like as the woman, it's like you are the vessel carrying this child. If you have a miscarriage, it's your fault in a lot of times, even though we know it's not. Like women are still told that is still a factor that people talk about. Even the way that now, right, like if you look at women are literally being criminalized for having miscarriages and things like that too. And I think it just sets you up to be very afraid that you are going to do something wrong and cause your child to die or have something happen
and it's going to be your fault. And how are you going to live with yourself?
It's just like, I guess I'm feeling angry right now on behalf of women, because I think, one, nobody's saying this to dads.
Yeah, I think women are trained much more than dads. I mean, especially if you're the one going to the pediatrician's appointment, going to the OB doctor's appointment. I mean, literally, Sam, they tell you, like, I didn't breastfeed at all. I had multiple lactation consultants when I was in the hospital try to pressure me to breastfeed, even though one of the times they came, I was literally like, I couldn't get out of bed. I was like basically comatose. Like I was half in and out. I didn't know what was going on. And I had to like shoo her away because I was like, my daughter isn't even here. She's in the NICU. I don't know what's going on. Like I'm not being taught how to breastfeed right now. I can't even get up to go to the bathroom. So it's stuff like that that starts. And it's like my OB and my pediatrician were wonderfully supportive about me not breastfeeding and things like that. But part of the process is you watch videos on how to breastfeed. I mean, you don't have to watch them, but your OBGYN gives them to you. And it's like part of what you're supposed to do as like a Lamaze getting ready sort of thing. And I mean, the best way I can describe it is like propaganda of how insanely pro breastfeeding, how non-nuanced it is. So it creates shame and it makes you feel like you're doing something wrong. And one of the biggest things they say is, you must breastfeed because your child is less likely to die from SIDS. And that's one of the first things they start like talking to you about is obviously then there's like immune benefits. Your child will be less sick. There's so much of that stuff. And I read Emily Oster's work. She's done a lot of great work, I think, on looking at the studies. And I read her book, Crib Sheet, goes into whether that's actually true. And the data is not good in proving SIDS is unexplainable. Yes. That's the whole hard part of it. But it is very fearful. And then people talk to you about if you accidentally put your baby on their stomach, they will die. And it is small things that people literally talk to you about as life or death when they're young. And I think that sometimes carries through and is what happens. And people don't know how to shift out of maybe sometimes as they get older, the life and death intensity scenario of it. And honestly, it wasn't until Peyton fell off, she rolled off of her changing table when she was 6 months old, 5 months old. It was like one of the most terrifying moments of my life because I thought she died. I thought, but it was actually something that like long-term sort of helped me because it helped me realize
she's durable.
Yes. She has jumped out of her wagon before on her head. And I think almost, and this is what I'm sort of saying, is we almost also have become a victim to things never happen to kids as much as they used to I have mixed feelings about The Anxious Generation as a book, but I do think one of the principles he talked about is how we've become so much less risk. Like we've been so afraid and we don't allow our kids to take risks. Correct. And play and have risks in real life, right? Like they can't go down the street and, they can't, and there's a big, my critique of that also is it's very hard to do that and just let your kid run around depending on where you live, socioeconomic factors, and your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Like if you tell your kid to just go run around and play outside and there are no kids outside and your kid is like seems weird for doing that, they're not going to enjoy the childhood that you did. You have to kind of create an agreement among parents. And he kind of talks about that as a collective action problem.
Which I agree with him actually on that. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the issue is the reason why that used to be so commonplace is because the majority of neighborhoods were fairly safe.
Yes. Yes. And people trusted each other more. Things were less polarized. Yeah. That's why this issue is so complex. And we have no answers. We're just trying to talk this out and figure out how we feel about it. But I do think I really didn't understand until I became a parent how much people would talk about my child dying.
I think like what is so concerning to me, and this was the same way when I like the clients that I've worked with and the clients that I am working with right now, I think what is so concerning to me is the level of anxiety that women are living under. You don't make good decisions when you're living in fight or flight mode. Like for your nervous system to be that activated, like, you're not, you don't make like value-based decisions from that place. Mm-hmm. You are more likely to make the reactive decision. You are more likely to make the more dramatic, intensive decision. Mm-hmm. And I think what I feel so frustrated with is like, I am a 100% bottle-fed baby. Formula, born and bred baby. And I think I turned out pretty good. Maybe there's someone listening here that's like, that finally explains it.
There are just too many factors to boil it down to a single factor. And I think the problem with studies a lot of times is we want to, right? Like the obsession with breastfeeding was an overcorrect.
From formula
From breastfeeding is gross, which used to be the thing. And we just keep overcorrecting over and over and over again. And
at the end of the day, if you are invested and caring and doing your best to make the best decision, I think you're going to be offered more grace than people give themselves credit for. Now, again, we're not talking about the social media sphere here. I mean, God, you could stand up and say, everybody deserves to be loved. And someone's going to be like, but not that person. Like, that is a whole different, like, bear unto itself. But I think in day-to-day life, like, I just think it is so sad the amount of fear people feel about doing things, even when after they've thought about it and they're like, I feel like this would be best for us, but we can't because of like A, B, C, D, E. And it's like, but why? Like,
or people are doing it and they're not talking openly about it. So then other people don't realize that there are other options. I think like sleep training is another one that's like extremely intense if people are extremely for it, extremely against it. And the truth is, it's like a bell curve, like most things. Some babies struggle so much with sleep that nothing you do will help them. Some babies are so great with sleep, you could do nothing and it would help them. And some of them are in the middle and they can be influenced.
Well, and also like with this level of anxiety and the level of fear and the level of like overwhelm too, like what we're essentially doing is like, by being so rigid, we're cutting parents off at the kneecaps to learn how to make decisions that are best for their kid and their family. Like to feel that they have the confidence in knowing what their kid needs, what their kid is capable of, what their kid can handle, what their kid can't handle. Like it's making me really sad, like to sit in this space. And like, obviously, like I've seen it in my clients and my friends and my family, and I see it with you. And you know, even now in this conversation, I just feel like part of this issue is everybody is feeling so fucking stunted in like, there's so many decisions, they can't possibly be nuanced about all of those decisions. There must be some type of like right or wrong track, which like, don't drink around your kids. Like, you know, don't let your kid play out in the street completely unsupervised. Like, you know, don't leave your child home alone by themselves if they are not age appropriate to be able to know how to call you or call someone else, right? Like, there are things to be aware of, and there are things that are like that is directly putting your child in harm's way. But I also feel like passionate about like the bottle versus breastfed narrative, because I've seen so many of my clients be absolutely demolished by it and the fear of it. Yeah. And feeling like they are the worst person in the world because they've realized breastfeeding doesn't work for them. Yeah. And I just feel really like sad for women right now. I feel sad, and how impossible we've made this feel with all of these different factors at play. And if we even start to open the door to the social media conversation, like the comparison and the judgment and the, you should be doing it this way, you do it this way. If you really believe in this, you would really actually do this. You would never do that if you believed in this. And it's just like all of this like finger pointing and shaming to just deflect from the fact that, yeah, guess what? When you become a first-time parent, you're meant to feel insecure. It's a big deal. It's a big change. And you feeling insecure doesn't mean you're going to do it wrong. You feeling overwhelmed by something doesn't mean you're going to automatically make the wrong decision. Like when I did CPS, we had there was a training that was called the period of purple crying, I think it was. And it was this training that advocated to parents who struggled with like emotional reactivity to be like, if your kid is crying, put your kid down. And I remember in that training, sometimes people are like, well, but are we not like helping them regulate? And I'm like, bitch, that's the regulating tool. Like, if that is the thing, if putting their kid down, leaving them in the crib for 10 minutes is the thing that stops us from getting a shaken baby that is either now severely disabled or dead, and a parent that is now in jail, that kid is going to survive 10 minutes alone. And I just, that's what I get so mad at.
But I think you pointed to that exactly, is that when we overcorrect, we don't support parents, it is impossible, and then mistakes happen. I totally agree with. I think it's also, maybe it's also me being a therapist, but I feel extra pressure sometimes of just like, because there's a lot of therapists online that are so passionate about talking about like attachment theory, and you're going to like mess up the attachment of your child if you sleep train or if you do this or you do that. And there is so much, everyone is scared of being like, everyone struggles with being a parent. So I think it makes people all be falsely like need to believe that they're doing the right thing, and that then anyone else who's doing something different is wrong. And it just becomes so intense to the point that, you don't even want to share what you're doing necessarily, because it is.
You open yourself up to so much ridicule and judgment and questioning and second guessing. And
And I truly, I think I am so open about not breastfeeding, one, because I'm very passionate about it, but I also like have a good excuse. Like, I was separated from Peyton for 48 hours. I was like having a huge health crisis. I was in liver failure. So if anyone tries to come at me, I have a very good excuse. Where other things, like some people don't, like if it's very easy when you have an excuse to just kind of fall back on that, where it is much harder and takes more courage, in my opinion, to be like, I didn't breastfeed because it wasn't right for me. I could have, and I didn't want to. And you're called selfish and all these like insane things. And it's very hard when you're in like a fragile mental health state, I think, to separate yourself from that.
This is also where I get really mad at other women. Mm-hmm. Is I'm like, you know how hard this is. You know how hard and overwhelming and frustrating this is. And how dare you? How dare you have the arrogance and the audacity to look at another woman and rip her to shreds?
Because they're afraid and they're nervous and they don't have full confidence in what they're doing, or they've convinced themselves their way is the right way, because parenting is so ambiguous and you don't know if you're what you're doing, and you don't find out how well you did until much later, and you have to just figure it out along the way, and it's always changing. So I think even I do this, like I cling to, while I'm like not judgmental of other people for the most part, like I very much like to cling to like my way of teaching pain, right? Like I'm going to teach her how to not have an eating disorder, and I tuck that in my, you know, away as a good job, Amanda, you're doing this great thing, and she could still end up with a fucking eating disorder, even if I do everything right. And because of that being so scary, I think it makes women be even more obsessed with their way is the right way. And I have to, because it's so intense, you can't hold nuance very well. And it's even, we have Michael Facciani, who we did that really great podcast episode on that's going to come out soon. And he talked about, right, like the importance of, to be able to have more nuance, to be able to fight disinformation, you need to have other people in your life that do things differently than you. And I just had this idea as I was talking to you about this of how important that probably is in parenting, because I think it is so common to be in this really, you know, knit group of people who are all doing this one thing, and this is the right way to parent. I mean, especially you could go on and on, Sam, about like the religious context of this and how that can become more extreme over time. And it is just so sad, because it's just like, even if you're someone who I completely disagree with politically on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, I do have to believe as a parent that you want the best for your child.
Yeah. you think you're doing what is going yes. to help them live their best life. And something that yes. was – this is going to be kind of like a funny example, but it has to do with parenting, so we'll just go with it. My mom – well, when I was like a preteen and a teenager, I really mm-hmm. struggled with my image, like my self-image. Yeah. I had a really hard time with yeah. that. It's something that still lingers to this day. And my mom yeah. didn't know what to do about it. Yeah. And so she kind of went a little bit of the reverse and became a little too critical in kind of trying to be like,
oh, totally.
No, do this. You need to do this. Don't wear that. Wear yes. this, right? Which I think is a very, yeah, yeah, I'm not yeah. throwing her under the bus at all. I think that's a very common approach.
Yes, because you, yeah, you're yes. like, I can help. I have a solution exactly. for you.
That boomer moms used, at least like.
Yeah, the amount yes. of parents I think that were like, I'll buy you clothes if you exactly. lose weight.
Yeah.
And like, I'll pay you $1 for $10 for every exactly. pound you lose. Like, because they thought they were solving right. a problem.
They thought they were helping and that they were, in fact, building our confidence. Yes. And so something yes. that I, as we came out of that and I, you know, had conversations with her about that and moved mm-hmm. forward, something that I had to say was like, just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's wrong. Just because yeah. you don't like the style of this piece of clothing yes. doesn't yes. mean it is yes. an inherently bad piece of clothing. It's just yeah. that you wouldn't wear it and I would.
And maybe also like not everything needs to be the most flattering thing exactly. even possible, which is something I yeah. still very much cannot do very well.
yeah. So I
– but the Gen Z kids, they know how to
wear the baggiest shit I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, damn.
Like, this doesn't look
flat. Swimming in those pants, honey.
Yes.
Regardless, now that I just sounded like I was a boomer. So the reason I bring up that example is because I think it's the same thing when people are confronted with something they don't like or something that they wouldn't necessarily do because that thing doesn't apply to their situation. That's mm-hmm. okay. That also yeah. doesn't mean that that person is absolutely destroying their child's life. So, yeah. you know, obviously, if you find out someone is hitting a kid, if you find yeah. out someone is calling a kid names, yelling at them, berating them, like if you find out a child is being sexually abused, big, like there are very obvious yeah. things here that like when you find it out, you need to report it to the proper channels, make sure it's investigated, make sure the kid has what they need. Like, there are obviously like big capital T trauma things that we can do here. But yeah. for example, if you are someone that is like hyper competitive in sports with your kid and mm-hmm. is very concerned about how they perform in sports and sports are a big culture in your family, another family not caring about that, that doesn't mean that kid is going to be any less successful than your kid, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with like mm-hmm. kids play instruments. Kids don't play instruments. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're mm-hmm. super worried about straight A's and A pluses. And this family's like, you know what? We're happy with a B minus. We got you mm-hmm. through the school day. That's a win for us because yeah. we know how hard school is for you. Right. But then I know that there's people that look at that and go, your standards for your kid are so low. Like you don't believe in them, blah, 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 blah. And I just, this is a skill that I think could apply like to any mm-hmm. standard of life, right? But like with this whole parenting thing and the level of judgment that we have for each other, and I will tell you right now, hand of the square, the judgment that I have that probably is not fair, but I cling to it. If you homeschool your kid, out. Straight up.
What do you mean
I out? Don't want to talk to you.
Mine is exactly.
Well, that too. Yeah. If you don't vaccinate your kid, that's a really, really, really tough one for me.
Well, it's hard because that child does impact other right. people, but that is like a whole other rabbit hole
that we could go down for forever. But
yeah.
Yeah. And I get it. Sometimes homeschooling works. And I've met kids that were homeschooled that are actually very nice. But I've also met kids that were homeschooled that were freaking weird. So
I think it depends on yeah, like how prepared yes. and if like, you're trying – like are you yes. a teacher
who exactly.
homeschools your kid? Or did you take yes. appropriate – do you know how to teach them or especially yes. the religion and homeschools?
And I think really maybe I should make that hyper-specific. It's the religious people. That yeah. is very triggering yeah. for me because I find totally. That to be like you are self-imposing your fear and anxiety of the world onto your kid.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah, especially, oh my gosh, if you go into Duggars, you go into high control religion, how much they're – these kids are not given the opportunity to interact with the world.
Nope.
They
– nope. Yes. If you, you are like homeschooling but you're still like – you go out, you do things, they have friends. They should like, that's a different conversation. I think I would be open to like exploring that.
Especially if your school isn't, you know, isn't good and there are other challenges. Right. You don't have school close to you. That's acceptable.
Obviously there are different things. But I guess if you're religious and you're just like, we want to live on a farm. No, sorry. You're not going to get my support there. But regardless, those people probably aren't listening to this podcast. So that's fine. Hopefully not. And if you are, bye. Like, sorry, this is me being vulnerable. But anyway, I guess like all of that to say, I just get really upset with how hard we are on each other.
If you are a parent, hi, hello. I would love to tell you about Therapy for Women. Therapy for Women is my practice and it specializes in working with moms. We don't have any advertisers here on the podcast because Sam and I have not reached that milestone yet. So instead, I get to tell you about my practice, Therapy for Women. We really specialize in working with moms, parents, postpartum, infertility, deciding whether you want to have children. So we would love to support you. We have 4 office locations, 3 in Pennsylvania in the Philadelphia area, 1 right outside in Collingswood, New Jersey, and also online in 42 states. Sam is also for a very short time taking new clients. If you want to work with her, reach out to us at therapyforwomencenter.com.
I think we're so hard on each other, though, Sam, because the society is hard on each other, which, again, I'll go back to patriarchy.
At the end of the day, whose fault is it?
The system is just not designed well, right?
It's not like, designed to be supportive.
And this is the prop. Like, I think this is the exact product of what happens when there is so much access to information. Mm-hmm. There is denigration in experts. Yep. There is extremism on both sides. There's extreme polarization where people aren't that. There's the erosion of third spaces. There's the fact that they're, you know, everything is unaffordable. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes you be more obsessed with trying to like curate your child's life better. And even, you know, I think about this a lot as a parent who doesn't want to fall into like intensive parenting, which I guess, right, is sort of helicopter parenting, you could say. And I think it is though really hard because, you know, I don't know, let's say your child really wants, like is really good at soccer. Like what is the line of if all of their friends play? Like I always was like, I don't care about sports. My child is not going to ever do, you know, super competitive sports. Mm-hmm. I was a competitive figure skater growing up, and in a lot of ways it like really negatively impacted my life, not just eating disorder wise, but I didn't participate in sports or after school activities. So no wonder I struggled to make friends. And then you add moving and forget it. But I think it will be hard, right? Because intensive parenting is like the culture now. It is hard to opt your child out of that culture because then they will be impacted. Like there is something to be said, unfortunately, for if you live in a culture that's like hyper competitive with sports or whatever, and your child really likes the sports, you can always pull them out later and be supportive. And, you know, I'm never going to pressure my kid to do sports or anything, but to qualify for, you know, a certain team, they have to do this, and to qualify for that team, they have to do that. And then you end up doing like travel sports sometimes, which you said you would never do because it's what your child wants to do and it's where all their friends are.
Right.
So I think that's the other, that is like the collective action problem of even we've talked a little bit on here about like no sleepovers. Mm-hmm. Like if you're okay with sleepovers, but everyone in your circle is like sleepovers are horribly dangerous, you're not going to do sleepovers because there's no one to do sleepovers with. And I don't even know how I feel about it lately. But I've heard people say, well, we do something where we pick them up really late at night. And to me, I'm just kind of like –
that's the purpose.
And it's like – I mean, it's almost – I don't know. Yeah, it does. But it's also like, are you really keeping them safer? Like what's going to happen in their sleep? But I'm sure people are going to be mad about that because some people are very against sleepovers. And I don't know. Maybe I will not do sleepovers. But I would hope – I think it points to, again, the problem is if we don't feel like we know our community well enough, our friends well enough to be able to trust them in that way, that is a bigger problem than sleepovers. Like, I mean,
I'm going to tell you right now. Like, if I had a baby
– yeah.
And let's say our kids were the same age, which they won't be.
Yeah.
But in
if you went back in time
and had a baby around the time of Peyton, I would have no concern having my child sleep over at your house.
Yeah, I agree. And but we're also very good friends.
And I trust your husband. And I really hope you would trust my husband. I hope I would trust my husband. that opens up a whole can of worms. But anyway, I think like so much of what this is coming down to is I think people are so afraid to trust themselves and to trust themselves in helping their kid cope with difficulty, especially like as we talk about getting older. Because to me, and I was very lucky, and this was like fairly rare in a home, like a really devout Mormon home, my parents were very open with me about like sex and protecting myself and what that would look like. But also I was very lucky that I had none of my friends had weird parents. So I just got really lucky. Yeah. But I also like, I think people forget, like I didn't feel close enough to every single friend that I had to have a sleepover. There was like an inner sanctum of friends that I felt comfortable and confident enough to do that. And those are the people I did it with. And they would come sleep over at my house and it was fine. And I don't know, maybe I'm living in some super privileged.
Maybe I'm thinking of the, I do remember when I was younger, sometimes the sleepovers would be huge for like someone would have like a sleepover birthday party and there would be like 20 kids. I mean, I still was close enough to them and my parents were close enough to them that I went.
My parents' largest concern at that was who are the parents that are in charge?
Yes, as I think it should be. I also think this is an interesting example of how parenting has changed that relates to this. Peyton at daycare has a good friend and she's been in that daycare with Peyton for a year. They're like adorable little best friends. I've met the mom a couple times. She's like wonderful. And they had another baby. And I thought about a couple times being like, if you ever need us to pick up your daughter at daycare, I would love to do that. But this is what's so crazy about parenting now, Sam, is that like I couldn't pick her up because I don't have another car seat. Mm. And you might just think, oh, well, they're two, so it'll grow up. No, kids now are in like booster and car seats until they're like 7 years old. So I'm sure at some point people will get less crazy about always needing to put their kids in a booster seat. But I think that's a very good example of how things have changed in the past 30 years since we were young of it is you lose some of the spontaneity when now we have all this research about like they need to be in a car seat and Peyton is, you know, these kids are in backwards facing car seats for a really long time.
I never was in a booster. I actually started sitting in the front of the car when
I
was like
I didn't
six.
Either because they didn't do that when we were young. And it's good to have the technology and all of that. But again, it's sort of like being a victim of – they make things to track your baby's heart rate in the middle of the night. And yes, and there's an outlet that's on their foot. And then there's a thing that's around their chest. And I never did that because I was like, I have so much – I was like, if she's going to die, I don't think I'm going to be able to save her in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And it is so much more likely to malfunction. And I'm not disparaging anyone who does that. I completely get the thing. And for some parents, it is very helpful to calm their anxiety. But I knew that it would make my anxiety way worse. So I just didn't play. But again, these are the things is all this technology, all of this information, all of these ways of, you know, giving parents tons and tons of scripts of exactly how to respond and do this and do that and don't put them in timeout and you know – all of that stuff, it creates so much pressure. And there are so many more things that we know can go wrong that, it's a lot.
We've overcomplicated it to the nth degree. And the thing that I go back to is I'm like, okay, when you think of being a kid, what was it that was like missing for you more often than not? And of course, there's a broad response to that question, depending on how you grew up as a kid. But if you grew up in a home that was relatively safe and stable and you have parents that you loved and they loved you, right? Like if you kind of came from a more run-of-the-mill home and you're now parenting, more often than not, the larger question is like, how did they respond when you made a mistake, right? Mm-hmm. How did they manage accountability when you do, in fact, make a mistake, right? How did they deal when they messed up, right? Did they say sorry to you? Did they apologize? Did they own their mistakes and try to do better? And I'm not talking about the cycle of abuse, right? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a parent slips up, says something maybe they don't mean, yells, gets mad. Did they apologize for that and own that, right? Did you feel loved? Did you knew? Did you know that you mattered to your parents, that your birthdays were important to some degree, you know, depending on your family culture and what you like to do? Were holidays decently fun? Like, did it feel like there was something, right? Like kind of these more basic traditional elements. I think we now are trying to make it so complicated and think that if we are so rigid in it and so controlling of it, we will be able to prevent any and all bad. And the, I came up with this metaphor by myself through my work. And I'm pretty proud of it because I've had it checked with multiple parents of multiple age ranges and they agree with me.
Okay.
So, because, and I'm also modeling this off of how my parents parented me and the, and the way that my dad like explained his approach as like I got older. Your job as a parent is to be a harbor. And your kid is the ship. And the harbor is meant to be a safe, relaxing place where they can hang out, get fixed up, like get their provisions, right? Get what they need. And then they go out into the big world and they come back. And some days they go out into the world and it's a sunny day, couple clouds, but they come back to port just fine. There's other days where they go out in a hurricane. But they need to know that that port, that harbor is there for them to return to. And to know that there are people in that harbor that are going to respond when they come back in from a really tough day. And I think so many people think that they have to prevent the boat from going out. That if there's a bad day, I need to keep you here. If something is going to be difficult for you, I need to keep you here. And it's like you are doing that ship such a massive disservice by not letting it go out and test its capabilities. And I think this is something that can be like applied to anything, like to any age range, to any situation, right? Like what your kids want more than anything, and I say this because this is what I wanted from my parents. I wanted to know that there were people that had my back and also people that were going to tell me the truth. And my parents told me when I fucked up. And maybe they told me too many times. But at the end of the day, when I would point out to them and say, I don't think that's fair, they would listen to me. And sometimes they had the wherewithal to be like, no, I'm in fact quite right and you are quite wrong. Because that is the whole point of raising a child. Your child is not meant to be the expert. Like maybe when they start getting to their mid to late teens, we can start having that conversation. But you, in fact, know more than your kid.
But I think this is because, Sam, we've gone – again, we've overcorrected from 50 years ago that
– they didn't even have a harbor.
Well, that children are just little adults. That used to be the psychological belief, which is insane. And now we recognize that that's not true. But I do think that – right. So much back then. Also, you used to get information from your friends, your family, your parent. It was much more localized information. It wasn't experts online or influencers telling you if you do this or that, your child's going to die or you're wrong or things like that, which allows you to be a lot more, I think, open to nuance in different ways that people do it. And I totally agree with that metaphor. I think what the challenge is that's hard is figuring out what is developmentally appropriate for how quickly they leave and where your job, how it changes because parenting changes so much. So your job changes all the time. And eventually that is the goal. Your child totally leaves the harbor and stuff like that. But especially I think in those first 5 years, it is difficult to figure out what is appropriate for your child.
Yeah.
How much space to give them. And I think especially in the first few years, it is so child dependent.
And I sit here and I'm even like, even while we're talking, I'm sitting here in my mind being like, do I even have a right to say any of this? But also like, I see what I see and I hear what I hear. And even like as a single woman, I hate that my For You page is still like, I still end up with like parenting stuff. And I'm like, please leave me alone. Like, because more often than not, the content is like, look at what child-free women are missing out on. And I'm like, like I really would, in fact, I would like to be a mom. I think I would be a really good mom. I don't know when you're 34 and the sperm donor is not in sight. You like you can't help but question. Like I know I still have a lot of time and there's plenty of ways that I could make that happen. But I think you start to think like, okay, like how would I be supportive of my friend's children? Or like if my sister has a kid. You know, I think it's just as a single woman that has so many friends who have families and knows of families and works with women who have families, like you just see like the pressure and the exhaustion and the this deep primal fear that everyone that I know has of like getting it wrong. And I want to validate that. Absolutely. I hope nothing that I've said as someone who's not a parent has come across as me being like dismissive or belittling. Yet I just feel like more often than not, we are letting the anxiety take the driver's seat. And like, even if you don't know, even if you don't know what the developmentally appropriate thing is, like just try something. And the worst thing is it doesn't work, then you do it over again. And we're not talking about like spanking. Like I'm not saying like spank your kid and see if it works. Like it's not that. But like, okay, if they go out and something happens, okay, like I get it. It's when you're being like dictated to by your worst fears, I just think that's where you open the door for moving forward all of the coulda, woulda, shoulda of like, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done this. Like I, you know, like when you're just operating from a place of fear, it just opens the door for so much. You're just not making decisions that feel aligned with what you really want. But I also hear what you're saying of like, it's also really hard to keep up on that with the rapidity of everything changing. And if you add in multiple kids to that equation and you're trying to balance all that, like it's hard. I just think,
And I think when you're early in postpartum, I think it is, you know, literally women go back to work so early. Many women who want to stay home cannot stay home. Women who don't want to stay home have to stay. Like there's a lot of issues and I think that makes people more anxious and causes more stress. And, you know, I mean, I've never before felt more like a vessel that wasn't cared about until I became pregnant, because it really shifts from anything about you to just being the baby, the baby, the baby, the baby, the baby. And even, I mean, I had a very traumatic birth. I'm sure one day we'll do an episode on it. I got an extra 6 week check because I was in liver failure. So they wanted to check on me a couple of days after I got out of the hospital to make sure that my liver was okay. And then I had a 6 week checkup, but like the 6 week checkup most women get, you get a postpartum depression screening. You're told you can exercise. You're told you can have sex. There is not adequate, appropriate follow-up. Almost every woman experiences intrusive thoughts and no one talks about it. I didn't know. Most people don't know what even intrusive thoughts are because social media has totally
and warped what it is.
What it is. And we'll do an episode on that. But yeah, so I think it's like we set women up not well and then it just continues and it takes a couple years to like really get back, like really get back to yourself. And then there's the pressure of society to bounce back. And then if you have another child, you're in the trenches for a really, really long time. And I really think there's just a, you know, this country is one of the backwards. Most hostile towards families and women and birth possible and it is laughable.
But I think
that people think giving a woman a medal for having a lot of kids will inspire people.
Which, fun fact, the Nazis did that. It's a fun historical fact for you. I think where we trip up in the United States specifically is just how stupidly individualistic we are and how yes. much ego there is wrapped in individualism and the whole rugged individualism at that. Like, I did it by myself. I did it on my own. Nobody did it for me. Nobody gave me anything. Like, this weird obsession with, like,
yeah.
nobody helped me.
Yeah.
And I kind of – my dad was very much like that. And mm-hmm. I know I took some of that on, like, even for myself and my hyper-individualism. Yeah. And as a single woman, you can't but help develop some of that yeah. in some ways. So, yeah. like, I get it. And I should – check myself on that as I'm, like, having this conversation. But also, it just enrages me to my absolute core how unsupported women are in this country. Mm-hmm. And mothers specifically, we've eliminated communities. We've yeah.
third spaces.
Yeah,
we're so intolerant of people bringing their yes. children places. So then it creates this horrible cycle where parents feel like they can only bring their kids to super
kid-friendly
places. So then, but then you see stuff on the internet that's like, don't just bring your kid to only kid-friendly places. Their life should adapt to yours. You shouldn't adapt to them.
But then nobody wants me around.
Literally, I was walking down the street the other day downtown, and Peyton walked into someone who was very leisurely riding their bike on a sidewalk, and the person yelled at me and told me that I needed to control my child because she almost hit my child when we were on a sidewalk and this woman was riding their bike. And she yelled at me multiple times that I was putting my child in danger. And, like, that is just such an example of you try to bring your child places with you to not only cater to them and you want to teach them how to sit in a restaurant, but then people get mad that you're there with your child at a restaurant.
I read a book. It was called The Nordic Theory of Everything. And it was a woman that was raised mm-hmm. in Finland. And she came to the United States to work and live. And she married an American and had kids here and the whole thing. And in the book, she compares, like, ways of living. And I was, like, reading through it. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, every single woman in Finland, when they find out they're pregnant, they will get this, like, box. And it has everything that they would need in it for, like, the first month or so. And mm-hmm. it can turn into, like, a little crib, like a little bed. Mm-hmm. And everybody mm-hmm. gets this. And it's kind of like this exciting thing that you get. And it, like, will fill the gap if you, you know, maybe don't have a lot of money or a lot of resources. And, mm-hmm. you know, kind of gets you set up and helps ease the burden. And then you have a year of maternity leave. And then your mm-hmm. spouse gets spousal leave. And mm-hmm. like, just the way she talks about, like, kids are trusted in society and there's this mm-hmm. like communal nurturing that, you know, people aren't just looking to, like, catch your kid making a mistake. They're looking to, like, be mm-hmm. supportive of your kid and, like, help keep them safe while they're out and about and you might be mm-hmm. doing something else. Like, I just think in America, like, we're so distrustful of people that want to help.
It's, like, shameful, too. I think, like, if you go back to, like, all of our roots and stuff, yeah, it is, like, you know, it is shameful to accept
and even
help,
like,
in any way.
Me in the airport, like, when I'm by myself,
yeah.
like, I've been on flights where, like, I see this woman, like, absolutely losing it. And yeah. I, like, want to go be like, do you need me to
yeah.
help? But then I'm yeah. like, I don't want to be seen as a freak yeah. that I just offered to, like, yeah. carry your kid.
Totally.
And so then
– but that's why this whole conversation, yeah. it is, like, a societal
yes.
problem, essentially, is our thesis. Thank you all so much for listening. We hope you give us some grace in – as we muddled through this conversation together and figured out what we think.
Yeah. We've just been – it's been a topic that we've, like, chatted about so many times. And what we realized is we were trying to fit in too much. And I think – honestly, we came up with, like, a list of sub episodes that we could have, like, outside of this one. But I think we've just been wanting to talk about, like, parenting as a whole for so long and issues and struggles and the perspective of someone who doesn't have kids and the perspective of someone who does.
Mm-hmm.
So we appreciate your yep. patience.
As always, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for being here. Reviews help so us much. So much, especially people will probably not like this episode. So if you haven't left us a review yet and you like us, leave us a review to cancel out the bad ones.
We'd appreciate that. Rate, review, subscribe, share.
We're also on Substack. We'd love to see you on Substack. We have bonus episodes there. Sam does weekly pep talks. We do deep dives, guides, all that. Join us at nuancemeated.substack.com.